Consider the last time someone said no to you, or not now, to one of your ideas or something you were selling. How did you react? Did you feel shut down? Were you offended? Or did you press on with the confidence that they didn't fully understand the benefits of your ideas or the value of what you were selling? No matter what your reaction was, it's a representation of emotional intelligence in action. And after you listen to this episode, you will come away with a broader perspective and tools to improve your emotional intelligence in sales and business development.
What is the DNA of business marketing? How do we market ourselves now and in the future? Brand communications is evolving. Are you? Let's explore together. Spiral upwards. This is Spiral Marketing.
Colleen Stanley is the founder and president of Sales Leadership, Inc. She is the author of Emotional Intelligence for Sales Success, Growing Great Sales Teams, and co-author of Motivational Selling. Colleen is the creator of EI Selling, a unique and powerful sales program that integrates emotional intelligence skills with consultative selling skills. Prior to starting Sales Leadership, Colleen was vice president of sales and marketing for Varsity Spirit Corporation. During her 10 years at Varsity, sales increased from $8 million to $90 million. Varsity was named by Forbes magazine as one of the 200 fastest-growing companies in the United States. Colleen, welcome to Spiral Marketing.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here today.
It's a great pleasure. Well, as a preface, how do you explain emotional intelligence to someone completely new to the subject?
Good question to start us off with today, Carl. And I think one of the easiest ways for people to connect emotional intelligence with how it impacts hard business and sales results is to give them an example. So when I'm meeting with a VP of sales who's hard charging, high driver, he or she might say, well, you know, I'm really looking for those tactical skills. And so I'll ask them a few questions. Well, have you ever taught your team a set of questions that are great to ask during a consultative selling call? And then they get in front of the prospect and they do a product dump. Okay, that may not be a hard selling skill problem. That's lack of impulse control. The minute the prospect indicates that they need something, then the salesperson goes into product dump, presentation dump. The other thing we might talk to them about is, let's say, for example, interpersonal skills. So referrals can be a great way to build business. However, referrals require building and maintaining relationships. So if the team isn't getting referrals, asking for referrals, it may be because they haven't developed good client relationships or those power partners on the outside. So usually putting a tangible with this intangible starts having people become clearer on the power of emotional intelligence.
That's great. Now, I've met a number of type A sales managers, and I'm sure you've ran into quite a few. Do you run into any disbelievers? And if so, what do you say to them?
Well, you know, absolutely, because, you know, the emotional intelligence piece has been taught in the leadership world for a number of years. However, unfortunately, in the sales organizations, it has not been introduced. So as we teach in training, people believe their own data. And again, how you get them believing it is simply asking them a few questions. So let's say you might ask a VP of sales, you know, tell me about the greatest boss you ever worked with. Give me some descriptors. And often what you'll find is they'll say things like they were a great communicator. They understood me. They mentored me. Well, those are all soft skills, emotional intelligence skills, not hard skills, such as he was a great financial person. He was a technology whiz. Now, they indeed may have had a boss that had those hard skills. But when you ask them to describe some of the best people you've worked with, it's generally the soft skills that are popping up. And you can say the same thing with salespeople. In fact, Carl, in our hiring seminars, we ask people to write down the worst hire they've ever made and why. And all the things that come up are attitudinal, it's soft skills. It's not necessarily that they weren't making their numbers, they were creating havoc in the organizations. So that's generally the way we get them there, is through a series of questions.
Love it. That makes a lot of sense. What keeps you passionate about emotional intelligence as a sales training tool?
I think it's seeing some of the increased awareness and progress that we find sales professionals gain, because remember, we teach a lot of hard selling skills and influence skills. They're still very, very important. However, if you're not diagnosing the root cause of a selling challenge, you're working very hard and not getting to the end result. So, for example, somebody may need to just step up their game on assertiveness. And that way, they'll get better at asking to meet with all the decision makers. They will get better at talking money. They'll get better at setting their expectations for what we call a true win-win. So I'm passionate about it because I really believe it bridges that knowing and doing gap. And it also rewards hardworking people that might be getting a bruise on their forehead because they're focusing only on one end of sales success.
Interesting. So it sounds like you really get to see a growth process take shape.
You do. And what you'll find is people will even say, I finally am understanding the root cause for lack of execution or the root cause of perhaps not closing enough business, the right business at the right margin.
Sounds like much more profitable therapy.
Yes, it is. Yes.
Alrighty. When you went out to, I think I know the answer to this question because you're obviously trying to help salespeople, but I like to ask, is there a person that you were specifically aiming to help?
Well, salespeople were our first audience, and the book was actually, most of the book was dedicated to sales professionals, but we were also looking at directors of sales, VP of sales, because if they can increase their emotional intelligence, it also helps them lead teams better. But, you know, you've got to take a look at that small business owner that also is wearing multiple hats. And so they've got the salesperson hat. This can help them. And even in their first hiring is making sure you hire salespeople with high, what we call sales EQ and sales IQ. And then you've got entrepreneurs out there that they may choose to be a solo entrepreneur, but again, they're charged with rainmaking. So there's different audiences that definitely benefit from the emotional intelligence and incorporating it into the sales process.
That's cool. Was there something like maybe an aha moment or a story of somebody that you met and it just really validated your decision to go down this path?
Well, I actually have to give two colleagues of mine credit, Marty Lassen and Scott Hilford. They run Complete Intelligence. And so they had worked with EQ for many years in the leadership world. They brought the idea to me and said, you know, I think you're missing the boat here. This is really a valuable knowledge, content, body of work that has made a difference in our leaders, and I think you need to take a look at it. So with my years of being in sales, I really started linking the dots as far as, again, what I referred to, that knowing and doing gap. People know what to do, and then under those tougher selling situations, sometimes I see those hard selling skills just go right out the window.
Interesting. When did you start to pursue that research?
It was about 6 years ago, and that I started taking a much closer look at it. And you're starting to see more and more people, not only in the leadership realm, we're seeing a little bit more of it happening in the sales world, but we're definitely leading the charge there.
Good. Okay. How did your past lead you to study this topic?
That's a good question. Well, you know, I had the good fortune of being with a small company that eventually went public. And I would say in my years of coaching and training people, I would see this pattern where they could demonstrate a role play, a script, a talk track, if you will, so to speak. And then, as I mentioned before, they got into what I call real life situations, perhaps with a tough negotiator, and they would start buckling. And so then I thought, okay, this isn't just about really being able to memorize selling skills, which is very important because I think the best people are scripted. It is getting to that root cause. So sometimes you would see people just not doing pure emotion management and fight or flight takes over and nothing brilliant comes out of your mouth. And as a result, you've ended up wasting your time and frankly, probably your prospect's time because it wasn't a very effective call.
I see. Well, I know that you did some work at Varsity. Mm-hmm. And so for those who might not be familiar, that's in the cheerleading realm.
Right.
I find that interesting because I imagine that there's probably a lot of fairly emotionally intelligent people in that industry. So I wonder if as you go through the sales leadership, sales process and helping people with sales, you probably saw some good examples and then coming out of that, maybe some really bad examples. Does that ring true?
Yes. You know, we had 130 reps across the country. So one thing that I probably wasn't as aware of as a VP of sales is the folks that were doing well in their virtual offices, home offices, had the EI skill of independence. And that meant they were able to get up in the morning, set their day, set their goal, and go out and get their job done. And so that soft skill absolutely helped them run better territories. They also had to be pretty darn good problem solvers. So they were what we call a 360 rep. They sourced it, they sold it, and then they had to do account management. And so that's a pretty big load. And so these reps also possessed what I call problem solving, because they were really good at taking care of the clients and in such a manner that the client came back to them. And then I'd also say that we had a lot of what I call social responsibility going on. People were helping people. So people mentored the newbies. You had veterans willing to share their best practices. And so a lot of that helped, you know, create the company they are. And they are still highly successful today. I think they're the biggest in the world in their industry now.
Thank you. That's a great snapshot. Do you have a favorite question that you like to ask yourself to keep yourself sharp in this realm?
You know, there's probably two questions. A lot of times if emotions are starting to run in interaction, whether it's a sales meeting, a conversation with a colleague, I like to ask myself, what else can be true? And simply by making yourself state a logical sentence, it gets you out of that crazy fight or flight emotional response. So what else could be true actually, I think, helps you apply your empathy skill in trying to step into somebody else's shoes and go, what's the world like from their perspective? What's the world like from their lens? And so that's a great question I like to ask myself.
That's excellent. You mentioned two. Did I miss one in there?
The other one is very similar, but it's called test your assumptions and assume your assumptions are wrong. And that's more of a statement. But the other thing I do is if I want to ask a question, I might just ask a question, what am I making up about this situation? So they all have a same tenor of testing assumptions.
I like that. That's powerful. You do talk about leadership towards the end of the book, and clearly you're leading your community. What do you think inspires your style of leadership?
Well, that is an interesting story because it goes way back to probably when I was a child. I grew up on a 500-acre farm in Iowa. And one of the things you'll learn about growing up on a farm is there's this culture. Now, they don't have a lot of rhetoric. These are not folks that give the rah-rah speeches. They really walk the talk. And one of the things probably I learned on a farm is that you manage results, not excuses. And an example I've shared with people is that there's a time of the year called harvest. And that's the equivalent of company hitting their revenue goals. So what's interesting, it can be a very tiring time of the year. Mother Nature interferes with, you know, hitting the revenue goal. But you will never, at least in my family, I never heard a member of my family say, we're not going to get the, quote, crops in. So it was just no option behavior. Also, probably because I was raised in a rather large family, it was just get the work done. So manage results, not excuses. Probably is a little bit my leadership style, which I hopefully it eliminates victim mentality and people giving into excuses and frankly not reaching their full potential either.
Wow, that's great. Was there a significant event that made you what you are today in this field?
I would say the only significant is just a series of events, and it's probably, you know, growing up in a small town can actually be a really great thing, because one of the things growing up in a small town is you don't have a lot of people. So in a small town, you show up and try, even if you're not that talented. So you might get the leading role in the high school play, and you're not that good of actress, or the musical, or you actually make the football team. So I think by having that ability to show up and try, kids from small towns don't wait to get good at something. I think they're actually a little bit higher risk takers because we don't have that mental script going on is that you've got to be great before you show up. So I've always landed in some pretty good opportunities that on the outside did not look like great opportunities, but I wasn't really overanalyzing it. I just went in there and figured it out. So I don't know if that's going to make sense to a lot of the audience, but I would say that was a gift I was given growing up in a small town.
Love that. I could see how being a big fish in a small pond would help the confidence.
Yes. And who is the gentleman? And the Goliath, the David and Goliath book. He talks about that, where sometimes being that small fish actually you get more confidence because you're having success. And part of that is it's just that self-fulfilling prophecy is that when you show up and try, you get time to practice. And when you practice, you get better. And so that's probably a part of what happens in those small communities.
Very good. Is there a leader related to this space that you admire?
You know, I would say a leader in this space are probably the two folks that brought me into this, the EQ into our business, Marty Lassen and Scott Helford. And probably because A, they were even ahead of the curve a while back in bringing all this to the forefront to their clients. And now I know they're going into even the neuroscience behind emotion management. And then I would also say Daniel Goleman, because there's a lot of what I call the academics that did tremendous amounts of research. Goleman was able to put it in a fashion that, you know, the quote layperson understood it. So the fact that he was able to bring it to the commercial world, the business world, I think deserves some kudos there.
Very nice. What are some minimal concepts that help people understand the value of improving their sales EQ?
Well, a basic concept, I think if I'm interpreting the question right, is a basic concept is to get some downtime. Because in the downtime, you'll improve a foundational skill called emotional self-awareness. And, you know, Socrates knew years ago that know thyself was an important quality, because when you know yourself, you can know others. So if you don't know really the emotions you're feeling, what you're thinking, it's really hard to read and relate to other people. And in the downtime is when you really get clarity. How'd you show up? What trigger showed up? Did you show up the right way? What's something you can do to change or improve? Who do you need to ask for help? Where do you need to look for help? So I would say that is a biggie. Now, in a very plugged-in society, none of us really want to get downtime, but I always just say, look no further than Google, who is offering meditation classes and mindfulness classes at their corporate headquarters to get the mind cleared.
Absolutely. What is just one powerful action a sales pro can take to become more effective and more emotionally intelligent as a salesperson?
It would go back, Carl, to what we just discussed. I would say heighten the emotional self-awareness. I think we probably already have always struggled with this, maybe as a quote society, but I think we're really confusing being busy with being productive. And, you know, if you really sit and just do some basic thinking, you can think about, okay, what in my day, what was it composed of? Was it revenue generating activity? Am I writing practice proposals? Well, what's the reason I'm writing practice proposals? Now, that can be a hard selling skill, but it goes back to that lack of assertiveness. You didn't have the ability to state, Mr. Prospect, I'm not hearing enough reason for you guys to make a move, to acquire this, to purchase this. And so I think it's heightening that emotional self-awareness to really get a handle on how are you showing up and how is that impacting the sales results you're getting. For example, if you're not getting meetings with the decision makers, is it lack of confidence or is it lack of practice because you aren't practicing your value propositions, which is, you know, delayed gratification, put in the work. So you don't sound very effective when you get the decision maker on board. So I think it's really having that holistic conversation as to what's the reason that maybe I'm not where I want to be.
Oh, I think that was very helpful.
And what am I doing right? Because then repeat it. So it works both ways. Hey, what did I do to create that? And how do I repeat that?
Great. Do you have a favorite story of a particularly emotionally intelligent salesperson?
Yes, I will tell you a colleague of mine, Tamara Kleinberg, actually, we got to know each other probably 10 years ago when she signed up. She will make this joke. She was running a fitness business at the time. And as Tamara would say, when people call into you and they're wanting to sign up for fitness because they're having trouble with weight loss, you should be able to close that deal. And she was not. And so to her credit, she invested in herself and really became a master of this process. And so what I've noted with her is that she's got high self-awareness, has a lot of humility, which comes with self-regard, will ask for coaching, mentoring, and is also really philanthropic in giving some of her time and mentoring some other people as well. So she was a great student, not only on the hard selling skill, but also on the soft skills. And I would say, again, that it's that high emotional self-awareness. And she doesn't cut herself any punches. You know, she didn't prepare for a call. She just said, you know what? I gave into impulse control, instant gratification, and I ran a lousy call. So it's interesting to have watched her over the years become very, very successful.
That's great. Okay, I don't want you to give away the farm here, but could you give an example of an action plan for someone looking to improve their sales EQ?
Yes, and I think the action plan could be sales EQ and IQ. So I think it's getting clear on what you want to achieve. It was interesting for me over Christmas. I got some downtime and I read Darren Hardy's book, The Compound Effect. And then I also read a Goldsmith's book on Getting Back Your Mojo. I hope I got those names right. But anyway, you know, both of them, what was interesting in the books, just talked about setting your goals out. And, you know, this has been around for years. Then they did it in a very good manner in both of those books. But what do you want? Because if you don't know what you want, can't lay out the plan. Then I think the big question, and this will come with downtime and emotional self-awareness, is why do you want it? Because if you're not real clear on the why, then there's a very good chance you won't do the third thing, which is the what. All right. So I think it's getting clear on the what and then really clear on the why. And then what are you willing to do to achieve it? Are you willing to hire some coaches? Are you willing to take some courses? Are you willing to set aside time every day to improve a piece of knowledge or skill? Are you willing to be humble enough to say to somebody, hey, I'm not that good at this, and maybe even delegate it off? And then I think that leads into your plan on the how. But, you know, it really goes back to some basic goal setting. Lay out the goals, and, you know, some of that's by quarter, personal and professional. You could do Stephen Covey's by the seven roles you have in your life. But then I think it's looking at them every week, then doing a checkpoint. How am I doing on hitting the goals? So I know, Carl, for me, I needed to get a little more vacation in this year, and I'm proud to report that we're headed to Ireland in May. So that was all part of the goal setting that I did is at the front part of the year.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay. How about the top three unexpected insights in the research?
Okay. Number one, I was really surprised to learn about the neuroscience behind emotion management. And this is where, when you really start studying the limbic system, reptilian brain, how much you have to really know that and manage that. So really understanding neuroscience behind emotion management was huge, because I'd kind of been taught the belief systems and talk the IMs and visualize. And sure, in some cases, I wasn't progressing. Well, you know what? It's because emotions were running some of those meetings too. And then the second thing is, I would say I was really surprised at just what I mentioned, how much your self-talk creates the emotional state, which affects how you show up. And so even though I had learned some of that years ago, really tying those, what you're saying to yourself, how it creates emotions and then impacts your actions there. And then I'd say the third insight was learning about the various EI competencies. And I would say particularly, I think the impulse control and how much you need to get the reward and how many of us are not having the willingness to sometimes to delay that gratification. But all 15 competencies are great to look at. Self-regulation, you know, just how you're showing up. So those would be my top three.
Thank you. What resource for further insight and inspiration on this topic do you recommend for growth? And I'm going to go ahead and plug that your book is an excellent resource. And your website has also great resources on it. And I watched your presentation, which I still remember months later. That being said, what other resources would you recommend?
You know, Howard Stein, let me make sure I look at my bookcase here, get the right spelling. The EQ Edge is a great book. And they actually, he heads up MHS, and that can be a company where you can actually, you know, you can work with a consultant, get your EQI 2.0 profile. That can be a great resource there. EI 2.0 by Bradbury is a good book. And then anything by Goleman, obviously, is a good book as well. And I think once you get a baseline, then when you start reading other books, whether it's, you know, personal development, Tony Robbins, Dr. Dyer, you're going to find that a lot of those books are incorporating EI. In fact, we did a video blog last week, and if you study the great coach John Wooden, he was a big proponent of emotional intelligence. He never said it in his books, but when you study what made him a great coach, it was absolutely getting those players centered and managing their emotions. Coach Phil Jackson, and he recently wrote a book, I think it was a couple years ago, 11 Rings, and I was surprised in that book to learn that he was the meditation coach, the Zen coach. And so you'll see all of these topics start blending together, Carl, that a lot of that emotion management is really, you know, getting centered, know thyself, which is going to help you show up better every day, the person and professional that you want to be.
Wonderful. Okay. This is our opportunity to wax poetic on the topic a little bit.
Okay.
What do you think the future of emotional intelligence in sales will look like?
I think more and more sales organizations are going to adopt it and insist that their sales leaders get more well-versed on it and their salespeople do. Because, you know, for me, I believe it's the competitive weapon out there. Again, we teach a lot of the hard selling skills, and you must have those. But yet, how many companies have invested in teaching sales and sales training, and they can't get their teams to shift, either absolutely use the skills because, you know, you'll actually go through something called the J curve. You're a little uncomfortable, your self-doubt sets in. And so without some of that high awareness, you will find most change initiatives don't occur. I also think just as the world gets bigger and more competitive, it is going to take a sales village to win. So if you've got a bunch of lone rangers on your team, well, that's nice, but a lone ranger can't hit the company goals. So you need to have people that have that social responsibility, want to help mentor people, want to share their best practices. Because I always tell my sales folks and clients, the competition's outside the building. It's not in the building. So for heaven's sakes, let's make everybody as good as they possibly can be. That takes a person that's willing to collaborate, still be very competitive.
Interesting. Okay. I'd be remiss not to ask, is there anything that you would like to add?
I would just say for the sales leaders that, you know, those are the directors and the VPs listening, is really take a look at not only how EI makes a difference in the sales process, you know, emotionally connecting with your prospects. I've seen people that they don't even have good value propositions because they can't demonstrate empathy and show that prospect you can walk a mile in their shoes. But for the leaders out there, you know, some of the very same skills, like if they're not being assertive and having the truth-telling conversations, they're actually creating passive-aggressive cultures out there. If they're displaying impulse control, poor impulse control, or they're not planning meetings, they're not spending enough time coaching and training their salespeople. If they don't have empathy, hard to persuade somebody on their team unless you can demonstrate that I've got the ability to walk a mile in your shoes. So I would really encourage those sales leaders to take a strong look at incorporating this at all ends.
Oh, there's a lot to reflect on there. That was great. Okay, what's the next big project plan for you?
You know, we're consistently looking at, you know, obviously different things, but one thing we're taking a look at is what are ways that we can help our clients increase the sustainability, because repetition is the key to mastery. So what are tools that we can provide? How can we augment our clients' work in helping them not only learn the hard selling skills, but these soft skills and make it what we call unconscious competence. So sustainability is something we're taking a real hard look at this year.
Do you think that'll look like new workshops, maybe a new book?
There is going to be a new book, but probably I'm going to say a couple of years.
Okay.
And there's some modules that we keep refining. And so I'd say that's what we're doing with the modules more, is refining what we've got. And that usually, it really comes from working with the clients, because the brilliance is always in the room as well. So we're always grateful for that.
Excellent. What is the best place for people to learn more about you and to reach you?
You know, our website, as you mentioned, Carl, is a lot of knowledge, and we did that on purpose. So that's salesleadershipdevelopment.com. Salesleadershipdevelopment.com. And we've got videos, we've got blog, we've got resources. So I encourage people to go there, learn more, download, and share with their peers, colleagues, and team.
Excellent. And I'll definitely have that linked on the show notes page at spiralmarketing.com for you.
Wonderful.
Beautiful. And your book, is it available on Amazon?
Yes, it's in Barnes & Noble on Amazon CEO Read. So it is available in bookstores all across the country.
Excellent. We'll link that as well.
Good.
Since speaking with Colleen, I've already told a number of people about her tip to ask yourself, what else could be true, in order to trick yourself out of an emotional state into a more logical framework. Hopefully anyone listening to this is interested in growing. You might go through the J curve and get a bit worse before getting better, but if you are disciplined to know thyself, well, Colleen provides a free emotional intelligence test with other resources, which I've got linked in the show notes from this episode on spiralmarketing.com to help you strive and thrive. While you're there, feel free to connect and let me know what you think. I appreciate you, the listener, so much. Cheers, friends.